You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and this weekend is, you know, most of us, but not all, will be enjoying a little bit of rest from our work lives, and it's a perfect time to take a look at the topic of work and the role of work in our lives. This is a very timely subject because, not just because of Labor Day, the timing of this interview, but because of the nature of work that's been changing. It changed a lot during COVID, and it faces an uncertain future due to technology, our economy, and a lot of different things. So we're going to talk about work today here on Labor Day weekend, and to help us do that is going to be Robert Bruno, who's the director of the Labor Education Program at the University of Illinois, where he also teaches labor and employment relations. But Bob's got just come out with a brand new book that I recommend to our listeners. It's called What Work Is, a very simple title, but it's really interesting. And Bob, I'm so glad to have you on the show today. Thank you.
Well, Robin, I can't think of a better place to be than having a really smart conversation about work and workers with you and for your listening audience. And I'm really grateful that you're willing to give the time to talk about this very important topic. So thank you.
Thank you. I, you know, as somebody who teaches part-time as well, I was really intrigued by how you develop some of your information with this book, which is newsworthy. Talk a little bit about the inspiration of the book and how you integrated some of your teaching and students into the subject matter.
Yes, very, very important, I think, how this book really comes to fruition, what are its origins. And really, there are two, if you will, inspirations. One is that I'm an avid listener of National Public Radio, and I found very captivating something that they called, and they continue to do, something called the RACE, R-A-C-E card, where they ask viewers in really just a few words to express the way in which race in some way impacted, marked their lives. And these are very short, evocative responses. And I really felt like it opened up the topic like nothing else I've seen done before. And I also have access to lots of workers. The vast majority are union workers who take classes at the University of Illinois. So I have all of these workers who are in my classes who I really want to engage with. And I thought about the NPR race card project. And I'm also a fan of poetry, and particularly working class theme poetry. And a poet by the name of Philip Levine, who was an auto worker out of Detroit, and went on to be the poet laureate during 1 year of the Obama administration. Levine has since passed away. Levine published a book of poetry called What Work Is, and the title poem called What Work Is, I found myself when reading it to be emotionally moved by it. And so I began to integrate the poem into my class, and I thought, well, if race is a powerful marker and shaper of lived experience, I think work is also. And I therefore asked all of my students to write a very brief essay where I simply gave them the prompt, work is. And then I said to them, in six words or less, just fill out that statement. So it's really a six-word essay, give or take. And I collected those over a period of years from all the classes. I integrated it into every class that I taught as a way of kind of bringing the students into the subject matter. And then I began to read them all and got a highlighter and began to curate everything I saw, and then started to categorize them into what was very clearly predominant themes that in one way or the other kept coming up. And that became the skeleton, that became the framework for the chapters in the book to provide an insight to how workers experience their lives through the work that they do.
Very interesting. And there's so much here that I can relate to from our parents' backgrounds, which I want to ask you about in a minute. But just follow up on that, Bob, that you categorize these into five categories. And just briefly, if you could touch on each one, and maybe we can go into depth a little bit as we continue our discussion.
Yeah, thank you. So there were five dominant themes that kept occurring and occurring. One was that workers experience their life through the way that work shaped and impacted time, right? So it's time on the job, it's time off the job. There is a legacy that they relate to, the past work done. There's the current moment in which they're trying to manage their lives, given their work schedules. And then there is some future expectations about where work's going to lead them. So so one chapter really looks at the idea of time and how time is actually felt and experienced as a result of being working class and having a job. The second theme that came up a lot was space, that workers are experienced their lives through the places in which they work. And of course, workspaces can vary by the number of different workers that we have. But there's also the space around them, so that the space around them, a good amount of that is built up. It's the product of somebody's labor, right? It's a product that the building, the bridge, the stadium, the park, labor mixes with nature, and then we get a world. So they talked a lot about this interaction with nature, how they shaped it, and how they came to be shaped, I think, by the space that they functioned in. A third theme was a broad concept that I called impact. That work has contradictory and profound impact on a person's life. So in this chapter, we're addressing the way it physically impacts you, how it psychologically and emotionally impacts you, the way in which the work change, and this sort of overlaps with other chapters, but the impact of work is that people get the medicine they need, or the impact of work is that people get to listen, to their favorite radio station or their podcast, or, they get the music product. The young child learns to read. The impact is both profoundly inspiring and uplifting, but it's also bone crushing, right? And it's also life shortening, right? So we deal with those contradictions. A fourth chapter addressed the purpose in which we work. One of the things I like asking all of my students is, and usually after they write their essay, we spend some time in conversation, we do some deconstruction of what they said, but I do ask them, why do all of these things that they're doing, and why consistently, and why, and and they'll answer in ways that you might expect. Well, we have no choice, professor. I've got to pay my bills, right? I've got to pay the mortgage, so I'm compelled to work. I have to work, but I also want to do my work well. I take pride in what I do. I like the fact that my work can help someone else, right? Oh, and my work seems to be good for my community. It seems to be good for the nation when we have gainful, meaningful employment. So I wanted to explore the way in which purpose is brought into people's lives through their work. And then the fifth themed chapter addressed the subject for whom they work. So again, a lot of leading questions to bring my students into the conversation, but so who do you work for? You know, and a lot of people will say, as you would expect, you know, I certainly work for me. I've got to take care of me. But then we find out that they're working for a partner, a spouse, a loved one. They're working for a child. They're working for the good of their school district. They're working for the health of the nation. So now you begin to see the interconnectedness that work provides for millions of workers who will never really know each other. But in fact, when they go to work, they're working for one another. I like telling people in the construction trades that, you know, you don't know it, but you've been working for me for years. And they look at me kind of funny. Well, that bridge I drove over to get to my class, right? The road that I took, the building that I'm in, you know, the fact that the air conditioning works in the summertime. Everything you're doing enables me to do my job, and my job is to try to hopefully raise your consciousness, educate you, and lift you up. So you don't know it, but, you know, I've been working on behalf of you because I want to honor the integrity of work. So subject is the fifth chapter, and then the sixth chapter tries to bring these things all together with some recommendations on how we might honor the future of work, given the way workers have actually said that they experience work. And that was critical to this work. I wanted this to be the voice of workers. I'm drawing from lots of data. I'm drawing from philosophers, poets. I'm drawing from other thinkers to lend some color, if you will, to the stories that are told and some legitimacy. But this is what workers say work is. So maybe people should be thinking about work changing in a way that aligns with what workers think it is.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today, appropriately enough here, Labor Day weekend, is Bob Bruno, who's a professor of labor and employment relations at the University of Illinois. He's the head of the labor education program there. And he's been talking about a little bit about a new book he's got called What Work Is, and breaking down some of the things that he's broken the book down into based on interviews and responses from students he teaches there at the University of Illinois. It's a very interesting book. I kept saying throughout the book, and I have this discussions with colleagues of mine, people I know, about work being your identity. Your identity is wrapped up in work. It seems like part of that's okay, but then part of it's dangerous, because if you lose your job, what happens to your identity? What was some of the responses of your students and these workers regarding that role of identity?
You know, that's a very insightful question, Robin. And let me share with you kind of behind the scenes. You know, in order to get a book like this published, you put the manuscript, the press puts the manuscript out there, and they send it to blind reviewers who offer commentary on the quality of the work and whether they think it should be published and maybe what changes should be made. And I had two reviewers who wrote extensive comments, and I'm grateful to the fact that they were largely positive. But one reviewer made the point. He said, you know, to your observation, you know, work isn't everything. Maybe it shouldn't be everything. I get how we make it everything, but maybe it's a whole lot, but maybe everything is too much, right? And I did reflect on that and actually made some changes in the work as a result. But to your point, workers clearly indicated that without work, life was short, nasty, and brutal, however Thomas Hobbes, whatever the exact quote is, they saw the implications of not having work. They had no other real assets and resources. They're going to have to live off their labor. So they saw that they were dangerously bound. They were dangerously bound to work, to their work. But at the same time, they did want to balance, right? They wanted to find a way to balance their time and the spaces that they lived in. They wanted their work to integrate into their life, so that they could feel, obviously, that they were more than just a pipe fitter. It would be hard to imagine what their life would be if not for working as a pipe fitter. But they thought that the work really made it possible for them to be individuals. In other words, the work made it possible for them to build a larger identity. But work needed to be the foundation. So there had to be enough of it, and it had to be meaningful enough that you could build on that, a hobby that you had, a traveling that you like to do, that you could see yourself raising a family, maybe starting a small business, so that if you really wanted to encourage freedom and the liberty to be who you wanted to be, we needed to make sure we had meaningful and sustainable work. So then people can build on that and go in the directions that they needed to go in. And people didn't want to go in different directions, right? They had aspirations in their life. So I think it's work as the foundation to then build a fuller, more comprehensive identity on, but always appreciating what work made possible.
You know, the other thing that kept going through my mind as I read this, and I saw several allusions to it by what people were saying. I had my students, where I teach at Monmouth College, do a study of the Maytag workers who lost their jobs in 2003, living in Galesburg, just 20 minutes away. And they interviewed some of these Maytag workers. And the interesting thing was, we asked, did they miss the job? And it was like, yeah, we missed the job, the pay, but we missed the community, the sense of community. And Bob, people are still meeting there 20 some years later. There's a group that meets for breakfast. There's a women's group that meets for lunch monthly. They still get together. And while they're getting older and dying off, it's that sense of community and togetherness that was as powerful as the job itself.
Yeah. Well, so you're really reflecting what was something communicated also in the book, and is also borne out by a lot of robust research, and that is that workers certainly need to be well compensated for their work, but there's also the intrinsic benefits to work. There is camaraderie. There are friends. There is a sense of solidarity, of doing things together. And certainly, you know, as we move into a more remote AI generated workforce, it will begin to challenge the sense that the workplace can be a place where you grow up. In the chapter around space, workers talked about how work is a school. It's a place where I learn. It's a place where I problem solve. It's a place where I, you know, develop relationships. And I think that this rings true for most people. So even, you know, so when that labor goes away, and one would hope it goes away, you know, when workers want it to, meaning they're ready to retire, you know, and they're moving on. But where there are things like manufacturing plants that close, it's not at all surprising to hear stories of workers who continue to have some kind of connection with friends that they made in that workplace. I will tell you, my father is 95 years old, And he was a steel worker for some almost 37 years. He and you know, my growing up in a working class steel town also contributes to my sort of mindset and sensitivity around this work. But at 95, Dad still has, and admittedly, it's beginning to dwindle, but he has this small group of people. They get together once a week, and it's at a Dunkin' Donuts or it's at a McDonald's. So, you know, we got diners out there in Youngstown, Ohio. And so there's still some connection to that group. And other than his immediate family, you know, and lots of grandchildren and his sons, and daughter-in-laws, really outside of the family, he's made the friends that he has are actually long-time friends. And it'd be interesting to see if Generation Z and millennials generation, whether they're going to have the same kind of work, pivot, work focus, spoken wheel kind of relationship with people in their lives as they age.
I'm glad you brought your dad up, because that struck me as well. You brought your parents up quite a bit throughout this book. And I think whether our ages are about the same, my parents were the same way in a lot of ways, working more blue collar type jobs and similar ways, working to because you got a family to raise, working. And then as time goes on, you're working because you take pride in your work and you're associated with it. But how did that influence you? And again, like I say, that you didn't just bring them up at one point. They kind of played a continuing role throughout the book. And that's one part of it that I really liked that you shared that.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And, just as a process, a process item, I think, that is my experience. That is my background. It shapes my identity. I'm very proud of it. And I think it helps me to relate to my students, and it helps me to speak to these topics. And therefore, it was relevant, really, as a statement of legitimacy. I want my students and I want my reader to know who I am as an individual, and that I see these same kind of themes play out in my life. And in my particular situation, Dad was almost a 4-decade-long steel worker. So I saw the complexity of what work was for him. You saw the sort of, just the drudgery of just going and working that overnight shift, for example, right? You saw that. But you also, and you saw some injuries, and you saw layoffs. But you also saw a camaraderie that developed. You saw an extended network of friends who they bowled with, they played cards with. They participated in religious observations with colleagues, And some real pride that they made something that was meaningful, that was durable, that made a positive contribution. So, I could see it in the give and take and ebb and flow of my father's near 40-year career as a steelworker, how he was experienced time, the spaces that he was comfortable in, who he was working for. It was pretty clear, who he was working for and why. And my mother lends this other layer of sort of complexity in that she's working multiple jobs outside of the home. She's working a job in the home. And then there's the uncompensated work that she's doing in the home, and so tapping into those experiences, I think, helped me in the conversations I'm having with students, and it invests a bit more of me, in the work. You know, it's a little bit more vulnerable because you're sharing something about yourself. But I think that really helps the reader to embrace the literature.
Running out of time, I've just got about a minute and a half left, but I want to summarize here, if I could, just a little bit. You mentioned poetry and your love of poetry. There's poetry in this book. I really like how you work in pop culture. Bruce Springsteen is in here. That's great. And how the working class is not portrayed very well in culture. That's a whole show in itself. I thought it was interesting that you talked about the commonality of the things where Adam Smith and Karl Marx agreed. Now, we're taught pretty much through school that they're diametrically opposed. And you quote Homer Simpson, of all people. I like that as well. But let me finish on this, and I urge listeners to grab this book. It's a good read in just a minute or two, if you can, Bob. But the future of work, what are you seeing out there? What trends are going on, and how could work be more meaningful to keep up with changes going on in our society?
Yeah, well, so the brief version of this is, in many ways, what's always been true is going to continue to be true. Work's going to be very complex. It isn't going to go away. People are going to do it. They're going to do it for very extrinsic and survival reasons. They're going to do it for identity shaping and intrinsic reasons. But certainly they're going to use different tools. And it strikes me that the spaces are certainly going to change. And therefore, we society, legislators, policymakers, employers, labor union leaders really need to focus on how work is this foundation to a quality life. It's really the foundation for the kind of comprehensive, rich liberty that people want in their life. And so being attentive to how the work feels to workers and how it's impacting and shaping their lives. So, you know, obviously be very attentive to how safe working conditions are. Be attentive to the working hours that people have. You know, make sure they can earn enough so that they don't feel like a sort of bonded labor, that they have no choice. Make sure that the work gives them voice, enables them to be creative, enables them to problem solve. There's no reason we need to have any bad jobs. Jobs can be dirty. Jobs can be dangerous. But those jobs can also be quality jobs as experienced by the worker if the institutions that we have in this society are responsive to what workers are telling them. So we'll see. I got no great predictions necessarily, but I think that's what we need to do.
A great book on work, a simple topic, but an important one. Think about it, listeners. I mean, when you meet somebody, what's the first couple questions you ask? Where are you from and what do you do? Work plays that role in our life, and this is an outstanding book that talks more about it, and I think we all can learn something from it. Book is called What Work Is. The author is Bob Bruno, and I've been delighted to have him as my guest today on Heartland Politics. Bob, thank you so much.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.